Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Raj Abnur. Raj, what's going on, man? Talk to me.
How are you, Yas? You okay? Long time. Hope you're well.
I'm very well, Mur. I'm very well. Raj, before we get into the thick of it, though, who are you? What do you do? Let everyone know.
Oh, good question. As I mentioned to you previously, I'm not one to talk about myself, and I'm really not used to this. I know we talk every other week, and it's probably taken 2 or 3 years to come and do this. But I'm Rajab Noor, pronounced Rajab because it's an Arabic name. I am currently in my 11th season at the Football Association. So mentoring within the D&I space, talent ID within the England setup, coach developer, as well as a brand new project called Birmingham United, which I'm the current co-owner and chairman of the club.
Amazing. Red, you talked there about a few different pathways that you've kind of explored and you're kind of currently involved in. Where did it all begin, though?
Well, it all began just being crazy about football, I guess. I think going way back, it was a case of knowing that, you know, the people that were around you that were better than you at football, that you thought, you know, would continue their journey in professional football, ended up, you know, not playing at all, which is crazy. And those that were scoring 150 goals a season ended up being a right back and spending a few years in the game and then dropping out. So that was a huge eye-opener. But for me, I think the biggest point of going into football was coming out of university, wanting to become a teacher or a lecturer. So doing that part-time. But then a job came up at the FA 2013, full-time skills coach. Which, you know, again, working in football is very rare full time. So very, very lucky to get that role. And it all just started from there.
And was that when the skills program first came into existence, was it?
No, it never actually. I think it started maybe back in 2008 or something like that, maybe even earlier than that. And again, the high caliber of people that were employed to work within that program at the time was unbelievable. You had some really, really high caliber of coach educators, coaches, and people that are still in the game, still within national setups or gone on to do other things within sport. So people that have played professionally for many, many years. So it was a huge eye opener for me.
So let's talk about that. Obviously, what does that role look like on a day to day? You know, you obviously working with players. How much of that was involved and how much of that kind of opened your eyes and started embarking on coach development, coach mentoring, that element?
Yeah, so in terms of the role itself, as much as I I did well in the interview stage and got the role. I was one of 52 nationally across the country to get the role. So it was almost doubling in size, the program. One of 52, 2 week induction at St. George's Park. Now, St. George's Park just opened, and we knew we were going to be out within communities, within schools, within community spaces, inspiring the next generation of footballers, boys and girls. So I think the program was so versatile and so flexible, it allowed you to grow. It really did. I had some really good people around me at the time, and I got my head down and knuckled down and worked on my coaching. And if I'm honest with you, I didn't have a huge experience within the foundation phase, so it was doing a lot of stuff with teachers in primary schools, fully funded. This was all free of charge. Previously, we were sponsored by Tesco's, and then it went to Lidl, and then obviously the program ended towards maybe 2018, 17. But it was really, really interesting to have that work program where you're working in so many different environments with so many different people.
So obviously, you talk there about not having any experience necessarily working in the foundation phase. People would have been selected for different characteristics and obviously different skill sets they bring into the thing. What were yours, and how's that developed since then? Because obviously, I think we talk a lot about coaches having certain roles and responsibilities. We talk about a lot around what a good coach should do or should be. Actually, fundamentally, it's very different depending on what environment you're coming from and where you, and who you're working with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just come off the back of doing my UEFA license in 2011, and then doing a couple of the teams. So I was working at my local college, doing a bit of coaching and teaching there. And I think, everybody's worked at some kind of foundation phase level within grassroots. But I think with the skills program, it was a level of expertise. And now there's people around me that were still now experts within the foundation phase, and I never knew that even existed. Now, the only experience that I had was the teaching at university and the practitioner experience going out within grassroots. So I think for me, it was more about what else could you offer? I was already working within clubs and grassroots clubs. What can you offer? What kind of skill set could you bring in terms of your personality, in terms of your technical ability, in terms of knowing how to take a player from, at the age of five all the way throughout to 16, on that journey of play development. And I think I had some bits in that, but then quite quickly realized, you know what? There's a lot of detail that goes into this coaching, a lot. Now you could, I literally was doing 7 days of just developing myself, so it was good to work in different environments. And even on weekends, I'd go and mix with different areas of the Midlands, or even, take the trip to London to experience what other groups and what other communities are doing different types of work.
Just on that then, you talk there about a lot of detail that goes into coaching, and it's a word that's closely linked to coaching, especially within the football world. What does that look like to you? Describe what you mean by that, because like I said, it's a word that's often closely linked to coaching and what coaching should or maybe could look like.
Yeah, good question. I think now looking in it, 10 years in the industry, I think now I'm focusing on the talent identification bit. You look at the fundamentals of what a good player looks like and what does good look like. So, for example, there's different ways of coaching, right? So we went through a stage where, we're talking about, oh, let the game be the teacher, and then there was lots of debate around performance versus potential. So in terms of the coaching space, what is it that we want to create in terms of the next generation of coaches? What is it that we want to see in a player that has been in the academy system for the last 10 years? What do we want the player to look like when they reach 16 and they're trying to get a scholarship at a club, or within grassroots? How do you really keep them within the game. It's not all about winning, no problem. Winning's not a dirty word, by the way. I think we went through stages where people were not using that winning mentality enough. So I think it's more about getting a balance, a right balance to the environment that you're coaching. And the coaching is all about the young people, not about you as a coach, not about the parents. It's about the young people. How do you keep them within the game, and how do you develop them on and off the pitch and give them the life skills to progress in life?
So just building on that then, you mentioned at the top there, you're looking at what makes a good player. What are the consistent things within that? Because obviously, there is bias, there is perceptions around, well, this is what makes a good centre forward, this is what makes a good fullback. Are there things that are consistent that you look for? Because obviously, and sometimes it might lead away from the more technical aspects, right? It might actually lead to character. It might actually lead to, do you know what? They might not be as technical as this person over here, but they're curious. They're a good learner. What are you looking at in terms of that assessment piece? How much of your thoughts go towards that?
Yeah, really good point again, Yaz. I think, we've come away from just seeing who the biggest and most physical player is, and at the younger age groups, just because, they've peaked a lot earlier in terms of maturation. It doesn't mean that they're going to be the best player when they get to 16. So that those younger players, those smaller players, those little dots on the pitch. I mean, do you see what they're doing on and off the ball? And these are huge, huge words that you're using around bias. And, we could be here all day discussing this, but most importantly, it's about understanding you as a scout, as a talent reporter, as a, someone who's identifying players. It gets even more difficult when you start looking at the 15 to 20-year-olds. So it's about, what are your expectations? What is it that you're out there looking for? And are you going to games thinking, okay, I want to see this today? So if we're looking for a left-sided centre back, which most people are, how often do they step into midfield to find a pass down the middle of the pitch, or are they always going sideways and backwards? So if you're really looking for that and someone does it, where does that sit within your bias? And also thinking about the unconscious bias side, which is something that, I'm really passionate about, the fact that, the lack of role models and the lack of Asian players within the game and the lack of Asian coaches, does this play a part? If the role models aren't seen on TV, then where are we getting the perception from that these players can't progress?
It's quite an interesting one, isn't it? Because the thing is, you've really got to challenge yourself to make sure that you try. Not that you get rid, you can't. I don't know if you can necessarily get rid of your biases, but you've really got to challenge yourself to be aware of them, and how that can be influenced, right? And I guess part of my thinking is leading me towards asking you now, when you're looking at a player, how much consideration goes into the coach that you're potentially bringing them in to work with? Does that make sense? And like,
Yeah,
if you
absolutely.
know that you've gone out to, you're putting a report together on, I don't know, this number 7, 15-year-old, but he's going to be coming and he's going to be working with Yas. But Yas is quite headstrong, and he's quite firm in his approaches. And actually, I don't know if this kid's going to be able to deal with that. How much of that is a part of your thought process?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's not at the forefront, I must admit, but most importantly, I think clubs are doing some really good work in terms of creating that belonging environment where, if a player comes in and enough about them to have that sit down with the coach or with the academy manager or the head of the phase to understand that. It's same within grassroots, to understand, how's their day been, how's their week been, what's going on at home. What's going to come in the next month, and also what have they been through 12 months prior to that? So it's important. Personalities are really, really important, and I think coaching or talent ID, there's, My personality, and I can only speak for myself, and I don't like talking about myself, as mentioned to you before, but I work really, really hard on myself every single day to take the ego away from my personality every day. And that's something I plan to continue doing. And that comes down to religion. But the coaching and the talent idea, there's a huge ego within the industry. Everybody knows this. You see it with it's the Premier League matches, the managers in the technical area, or it's the local grassroots coach who's, we've just been on the course and we want to implement what we've learned on the course, but also it's about me and not about the players because I want to experiment, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm just thinking about what you said there about the ego piece, right? Can this industry operate without it?
I'm not too sure. That's a good question. I think you have to have a level of confidence for sure. Does the loudest person in the room always is always the smartest person? But also, who is the critical thinker within the room? Who actually takes the time to understand players as much as possible and puts them at the forefront of player development?
Yeah, it takes me back to some conversation I've had, with coaches over time. And
Well, I'll ask you, how do we scout without bias? So if you're watching a game now, you played in a particular position or you like a particular player, who's your favorite player? How do you scout without bias? It's all about understanding yourself.
yeah, I think
And
yeah, it's a good question. I think for me, if I, scouting without bias is or just even observing players without bias is knowing what the intention of the observation is, right? So as an example, if you've sent me out to go and look at a particular player, first thing I'm going to be thinking is, well, what are you after? Because all well and good, I can have my bias. And that might play a small part in the process, but fundamentally, I'm saying, well, what is Reg look for in that player, in that position, or whatever that might look like, right? And making sure that you're clear on what that looks like for yourself, because the number of times I'm sure you've probably come across it where, oh yeah, I've got this great player, he's centre mid or whatever, actually, but and then you look at him and you think, actually, no, he's definitely not going to be a centre mid for me, but he's got some good qualities and. You could probably play in a different area of the pitch or whatever that looks like, right? And then it's just then it's looking at a wider context. You're not just looking at the individual, but what's the environment they're in? Are they clearly above it, head and shoulders above everyone else in the environment? Therefore, they're standing out even more. What's the quality of that around them? What's the opposition doing in that moment to allow them to maybe excel a little bit more? What's the opposition doing to maybe counter their ability a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? So these are some of the things I'd be considering in that. And then it might be right, well, Reg is looking for this. I'm going to put something together on that. But also, Reg, here's some additional considerations based on my own observations away from what you're specifically going after.
Absolutely. So the one I use is CAR, context, action, results, and organizations and clubs are doing some phenomenal work around collectively making decisions, and whether you're trying to manage down or up. I think there's some clubs that I've recently visited do some awesome work. Whether you're running a local business or you're running a football club that's at the highest level. And someone who's written about this is Atomic Habits. I don't know if you've read the book. It's all about making good habits and the
Yeah.
importance of making the right corrections and professional judgment.
I think let's come back to your journey a little bit then, Reg. Obviously, you talked, been at the FA for 10 years. If you were going back into the coaching world now, how would some of this reshape how would some of this reshape how you would approach coaching and how you would coach? because obviously you're not taking yourself out of the coaching context. So there's less, I'd probably say there's less emotion attached to it. Because sometimes, you know, as coaches, we do develop relationships with our players. We do develop those connections with our players, which could sometimes influence how we behave around them and how we work with them. What have your experiences working in the kind of the talent ID space and that scouting space helped you understand and learn about maybe how you can become a better coach off the back of it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so after going through the journey, and sometimes you are in a bit of tunnel vision, whether you're doing the Advanced Youth Award or the UEFA license, tunnel vision to implement what the course requires, if you know what I mean. But at the same time, you can't take away what the players need. And I think the biggest thing that I'm focusing on at the moment is setting the right environment for players, for parents, for coaches, for scouts, to really give that honest and transparent and that belonging at the forefront of any environment. And I think same with players. If you're part-time within a professional club or you're part-time within grassroots, you're very, very limited with time. And I know people say time is an excuse. Find ways around it so that whether that be online calls or calls while you're driving, find ways to really ensure that, you know, you are... The biggest thing that you care about is the players, the players' development, the players' well-being. And I think that is one thing that I probably didn't put at the forefront of my career, I should say, because I wanted to become that technical coach. So first day of B license 2011, you got coaches from Villa, Wolves, Stoke, and all the local clubs. And I turned up in my grassroots tracksuit. So that was quite daunting, you know, still at university. And I'm looking around, I'm thinking, okay, I'm in the deep end here. And there was some really good detail around coaching and people with, you know, that have played the game. So I was about, okay, I need to adapt to this. So I went away and worked hard. And believe it or not, I was one of five or six that actually passed the course. So those people that came, and again, it's perception. If tutors like you as a person, and they're willing to support you, and you honestly want to learn, and they see something within you, they are willing to support you. Another thing, I remember on the first day of our A license, I remember, you know, I didn't know you before the A license, right? I remember you were sat at the front and you were asking question after question. I was thinking, okay, this guy's ready to develop and he wants to go far within his career. Look where we are now. So it just shows that, you know, if you've got the right desire, you will succeed.
It's really interesting what you say there about the tutors, right? And I just go back to my own B license experience and think to myself, back then, obviously, with things like a 16, 17 day course.
By the way, guys, not just tutors, us as human beings, we lean towards positive behavior,
yeah,
positive communication, if you know what I mean. But carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking then, you know, I think you're spot on there as well. I think 17 days is what it was. And it wasn't until day 15, at the end of day 15, where I realized, where I changed my perception on, actually, this tutor is useless, to, oh no, this guy's brilliant. And the thing that changed and shifted for me was exactly what you just touched on there. I actually then, at that point, demonstrated, you know what, I really want this. I'm now being proactive about going to get that support, because this is the other thing, right? And it could be down to experience. It could be down to the individual. It could just be the way things are. And so that once the tutor at the time realized, actually, this guy wants to develop, this guy wants that support, I felt like all of a sudden the floodgates opened with all the information and support around it. Up to then, it was almost like, well, we're just going to run through the course structure. Does that make sense? I felt like he just opened a different door. And ever since then, I thought, right, yeah, this guy's brilliant. Because as soon as I became more proactive, I started getting more back. And I can't, you know, emphasize enough how important that piece is about in terms of the development, right? If,
It's the same with coaches and players. How often have you had a player where you feel like, yeah, this player really wants to work hard, and you just naturally you want to support them even more because they're giving you that effort in the first place. And even then, even as a coach, and you know the other stakeholders, you know, maybe a parent looking in on it, and it's like if they can see that a coach is working hard to try and do something good, they can even sometimes accept that it's not always going to be good and give you more time and more patience as a result of the fact that they can see that you're genuinely trying and you're proactive and you're passionate about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think we're always talking about players' characteristics. What about coaches? What about professionals working within the game? Are they a good decision maker in terms of asking the right questions, asking the questions at the right time? Can you see them in the future being a leader? Would you allow your son to be coached by that person, or daughter to be coached by that person? Do they lack character, or you know, are they sound in terms of all the different departments? So it's about having those fundamentals. So we know that within the room on the A license, there's people that have been coaching under 18s within Premier League clubs or Cat 1 clubs for 5 or 6 years, and they came on the A license. Not all of them, but there might have been some where they thought that they already had the qualification, and that happened to me on the B license as well. You know, that those people that thought that they've been there and done it, and quite quickly you learn, you know, what they really know and how resilient they are when tutors put them under pressure. Because now we're at the age and we're at the experience as where we know how it feels on the other side of the fence of being coach developers, and as well as mentors, and actually, you know, delivering to 50 people at the same time, what that really feels like. So, yeah, it's been one hell of a journey.
It's a completely different skill set, isn't it? And I think this is another thing that often people, you know, especially in the last couple of years, you've seen an influx of people trying to get into coach development, whether or not they're actually getting into coach development because it's what they want to do, or it's what they want to develop in, or whether it's, you know, it's an opportunity to work for the FA. Other, you know, it's obviously individual. How would you describe the fundamental difference between that of a coach and a coach developer, and the skills needed to kind of operate within both?
Yeah, good question, and a very big question. I think again, we talk about putting the players at the forefront of the process. It's the same with coach developing in terms of delivering these courses. Content is one thing, putting the content into context is another thing, as well as being able to relate to different environments is another. So if I weren't going out to grassroots coaches and doing mentoring, maybe my perception of spending an hour with a coach as part of their UEFA C development visit might be different. But the fact that it's not just about experience, but, you know, people always talk about, oh, back in my day, we did this and we did that. It's all about being at the forefront of how coaches are feeling now, and where is it they're getting their resources from, and what resources do they need at the moment in time, and where are they along their journey, and what's next for them, giving them those little nuggets that they need to progress.
Just on that, you know, talking about resources, what are your thoughts on that? Because obviously, you know, you came through at a similar time as me in terms of the qualifications. I think you did your B license a couple of years before I did, but we ended up on the same A license together. And is that, in terms of that level of support, in terms of the level of resource available to coaches now as part of formal education qualifications, where do you think that's gone? You think it's been stripped back, or you think it's been layered on top of? You know, where do you think that sits? Because obviously, there's a lot of coaches now. And I think one of the biggest transitions I've seen and changes I've seen in the coach education pathway and just how coaches are being developed is that you know, there have been arguments to say that before there was probably a bit more of a cookie cutter approach. Whereas now we're just going to allow people to kind of go off in their own direction a little bit and just give them a bit of guidance and support around that. You know, what's your view on it?
Yeah, I have these discussions all the time, if I'm honest, Yaz. And you know, even on the A license, even coaching, you know, at the highest level, it's all about, can you justify what you're doing? So when I get asked, shall I deliver it this way or shall I deliver it that way, or shall I change my coaching style to this, can you justify it? And again, I keep going back to putting the players at the forefront of the process. Especially with the older age groups. The older age groups is the business end of football, right? You want to win, and you want to win as many matches as possible, and you want to develop players. So how do you get the best out of the players? And I think coaching now, it all depends on you as a person. Did you prefer it back in the day when it was an assessment and you'll get a date and a time and you'll be assessed on that day and you'll get told if you pass or fail, assessment of learning, or is it now better an assessment for learning? And it's not an assessment, it's a development visit. So it all depends on you, if I'm honest with you. All depends on your personality and what you prefer. Me doing both, I think, again, I think that there's some people that they go on courses for the sake of going on courses and maybe not do anything in between those courses. So how do you hold them accountable throughout the course? They've paid for the course. They've given up their time for the course. Their club sent them on the course. So again, whether it's level one all the way through to A license. So it's just, I think the difference is your personality and what you enjoy better.
Yeah, I think I'm just... You're right. I think it depends on why you're going on the course. But I think...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, in terms of that assessment for learning and that ongoing assessment piece, I think there's probably merits to both. But I want to take you back to the top of what you said about justification. And I think it'd be interesting to get you what your perceptions are on it, in that I think when coaches hear this idea of just justify it, they look at it as, well, just give a reason why you're doing it. It doesn't actually always justify it, does it?
Yeah, again, it's all about knowing your players. If it's about coaching, then context matters. It really does. And if me and you are giving the same session plan to the same players, we'd still deliver it in a slightly different way. If you've been around long enough, you'll know you won't see a brand new session, but you'll see a variation of sessions delivered in a slightly different way with maybe some different constraints or interventions. So it all depends on you as a person.
No, 100%. So, you know, let's talk about it, Reg, you know, in terms of coaches coming through now, do you feel, in fact, let me ask you a different way, what would you say some of the benefits are now of the coach development pathway and the way it's progressed and developed to where it is now?
I think there's a lot more flexibility, and I think I think this is the third level two type UEFA-C that I'm currently delivering. And I think now, are we more clear than ever? I think we are, in terms of allowing coaches to experiment within sessions. But at the same time, we're very clear in what we want in terms of practices and what we want to see. We're very clear with the fundamentals and the six principles of, you know, of developing a player and what that looks like. So it's more about the context is one thing, but allowing coaches to go on courses and getting through courses to then trust them to allow to continue doing that when you're driving past the park and you see grassroots happening is what you delivered on a course at the forefront of the sessions, or are people still running up hills with those younger age groups? So
I think it's very easy to kind of dismiss one or the other, isn't it? And I think it's really important to kind of identify, like you said, context is key. even going back into something that you said earlier, you know, we've gone from that element of let the game be the teacher to now just accepting that coaching can come in different ways and forms, and, you know, just putting the players at the forefront is fundamentally important. So, you know, let's examine that a little bit in terms of that let the game be a teacher piece. What are your thoughts on that? What's your understanding of that phrase?
Yeah, huge debate. And for me, coaching is no different to going to school, if I'm honest with you. So there's still teaching taking place. There's still coaching taking place. So you set up the practice. You deliver with your objectives for the session. So it's all about no different to school. What you want to get out that day, that session, that week, that block of work. So do you design your practices where it's all opposed? It's all unopposed? Or do you actually have clear interventions and pictures that are ready to come out within the practice to take the player from one place to the other?
So I've always been conflicted by this idea of let the game be the teacher, and I think it offers an excuse for people to not coach. Right. Especially when you talk about, you know, this idea of game based practice, and making it look like games, and people just misinterpret it as, well, let the players play a game. Well, yeah, you can. But fundamentally, as with anything, like you said, coaching is like teaching something. You know, there's still a process in place. Right. And it's not just throwing them into the situation and saying, yeah, go and explore it. There's also got to be an element of unpacking it, reflecting on it, you know, pulling away the key takeaways, and even just identifying the observations and the challenges faced by the individuals involved in the process. So I think it's more just a vehicle to use as coach, rather than it is the coaching taking place, if that makes sense. I'm going to fast forward to something else that you said, though. You know, you're in this position now where you're a co-owner of the club. And a word that you used earlier about is role models. When you and I were coming through, obviously you've come from the Birmingham area, myself in London. I don't know what it was like for you growing up. Did you have those role models around you? I know that obviously, you know, doing a lot of work now with Birmingham United and trying to create an environment where those role models are visible and present. What was that experience for you like coming through?
If I'm honest with you, there were a lack of role models, of course, but at the same time, what you've got to understand, the environment that I grew up in, I just saw myself as a coach, if you know what I mean. So I didn't want to be different to anybody else. I just wanted to be treated equally. So if I'm honest with you, the first time, you know, I came around the D&I stuff and the lack of opportunities for diverse communities was, you know, maybe 2015, and I was doing community projects within the community, and, you know, when someone mentioned around, you know, everywhere I go, people mention around, why is it lack of role models and lack of Asians within football? But most importantly, there was a role actually at the FA, which was the mentee program. So at the time, it was more all around BAME. And that was the first time really I was labelled as a BAME coach, believe it or not. And I didn't really like that, if I'm honest with you, and I still don't now. But if an opportunity comes around, you know, I'm here to help anyone, regardless of the D&I space or not. Did I have people that really guided me? Absolutely not. But at the same time, I had people away from football that mentored me. So it was a case of just building those relationships. But how nice would it be to see someone that looks like you, comes from your background, to be on TV playing football or leading courses?
Just on that then, you talk about the mentoring piece. What, you know, and I get what you're saying. You know, there's obviously benefits to having someone that looks like you, and you want a sense of belonging. And I guess it gives you something to look up to. But, you know, for some of us, you know, we haven't necessarily had that. I certainly didn't even, you kind of interesting that you said that, you know, it wasn't until 2015, a few years into your coaching journey, where you've now been identified as a BAME coach. I actually never thought about it it never even crossed my mind when I was, when I was coming through, and it was almost, I didn't realize there was even problems that existed within it, because I was just the world, and because I was so engrossed in it, and I just wanted to be a coach and I wanted to develop myself. That was all that was on my mind. So it was only until a few years ago that I realized, hold on a second, I don't actually see anyone that looks like me. do you know what I mean? It was almost like, and I guess maybe I took that for granted, because also, you know, especially in the area that I grew up in the part of London I grew up, extremely diverse. So I didn't even, I just didn't even know. And it was almost, it's interesting, because even as my journey developed, you know, there is different groups that started to form, and different kind of pathways that started to exist for coaches and community groups. And people always just ask me, where's all the other Asian coaches? I said, I don't actually know any.
It's a hot topic, and I think we need to be very careful as whoever it is, the FA, Premier League, EFL, I think we need to be very careful of the direction and where we take it, and also not creating a divide, if you know what I mean, between the people that have got opportunities and the people that haven't. So I think it's a way of, you know, who actually confirms challenges or changes environments? Who checks and challenges the values of any organization, and how often do they actually update everyone? So I think it's a great topic. It's fantastic. But if you speak to the experts within D&I that have been working in this space for 20 years, they will give you data that is very, very clear, which nobody can argue with.
So I think they say as well that, you know, we are the biggest anomaly in the game, right? In that there's so many of us that are participating in it, but in terms of representation at a higher level, it's just virtually non-existent. So I guess, you know, from your experiences, you know, I try and really have empathy for a lot of people, because I understand some of the challenges that exist culturally. You know, traditionally, you know, being from an Asian background, you're probably not all, you know, for myself anyway, I've never really had to face some of the challenges that I think people have often described to me, in that from a cultural perspective, football's not really been seen as an option. It's often not something that's been kind of encouraged as much as maybe people want it to be. But I've never had that challenge myself, because I guess my, you know, I'm just thinking about my upbringing. And my dad came here when he was quite young, so he was quite climatized to the environment, and, you know, he basically grew up as a British man. Whereas my mom on the other side of it didn't really have that, but they just wanted me to go and do something that I was going to be happy with. But obviously I understand that's not the case for everyone, and obviously sometimes the cultural challenges do exist. So I mean, did you face anything like that?
I think more so as a player. So playing locally at semi-professional level, and it still is very, very tough for those players. Hence why we've took over a semi-professional football club, to be slightly different and to allow people who they want to be. I think the importance of culture and environment is huge. Just because you've done 20 years, I've seen, you know, the industry change. It doesn't make you a good leader, if you know what I mean. And yes, leadership is very, very important. But at the same time, who's being held accountable for setting the right environments? And, you know, some of the best environments I've seen, the leaders make employees feel really, really comfortable in asking uncomfortable questions. So I had a friend last week, you know, just met up casually, socially, and he mentioned about some training that he's done. He's done some training in D&I, and he knows nothing about this topic. He works in the corporate world. And they did the training. And after the training, the facilitator asked, are there any questions? And not one person put their hand up. So there was some awkward pause in there. So it goes back to who's facilitating the course, and also how and what interventions within the course or training did they make people feel comfortable about asking questions they don't really know much about, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because I'm actually involved in a project at the moment around supporting the development of some diversity and inclusion training. And part of the kind of the brainstorm session we had around what are some considerations here around what we just variables to think about was just that. Well, who's delivering it? Who's actually delivering it? And who is it being delivered to, and why is it being delivered? Probably perspective of, are you delivering it because you just think it's the right thing to do, or because it's the in-trend thing to do? Are you delivering it to people who are genuinely interested in understanding? Because that's part of the challenge, right? And you sometimes see these things that come off where it's almost, it's just a tick box. It feels like a tick box, right? So it's almost like, what happens after this? Is it just to say, yeah, we've done our bit? And you know, you've also then got other situations where there is like, you know, programs, events and conferences that kind of really support these causes, but actually in many respects you're already preaching to the choir, because these people are there because they're already on board with the idea of this needs to be a thing. So I guess my question to you is, in trying to emphasize and, you know, highlight the importance of, you know, the need for equality, diversity and inclusion across whatever industry it is, really, what do you think the first step is to kind of really maybe engage those that just don't really think about it?
Yeah, I think good point. Like I mentioned to you, the experts always talk about environment, a comfortable environment to allow people to speak up, people that can check and challenge without fear. Now, we mentioned about not consciously knowing or about the topic maybe 10 plus years ago, but how does it feel when you're seeing people like Butch deliver courses for the first time, or the Taff now doing the FA stuff full time, or people that look like you and you can have an open conversation around culture with them and they understand you? So there's got to be some fluid and presence of the hierarchy, and also clarity of roles, culture of feedback, where people are open to feedback. And these are really, really important for someone to progress. If you really want to be like a strategic thinker, someone who's planning long term and is able to manage up in terms of the direction of a company or the club, you know, can you really lead others without having that self belonging and being able to ask the right questions at the right time? And statistics are quite clear. Those diverse companies and clubs are miles and miles ahead. And I think we've come a long way, but there's still clubs that are lacking resources, maybe finances, that can't do as much as others.
Do you know, I think it's really interesting you mentioned that, because it just really brought back to point a conversation I had with a coach recently. I think it must have been about 2-3 weeks ago. And we were just observing a session together. And in fact, coach was reflecting on a session with me. But I've got a bit of an understanding of the environment itself. The environment itself, I would say, in terms of the players, isn't that diverse. Coach, part of the reflection was that basically there was one or two players in the group that he felt the head coach in the environment maybe not neglected, but maybe just wasn't as considerate about. And I just asked the question, as I think, do you think there's a perception bias there? And it can exist. It doesn't have to be malicious. It doesn't have to be deliberate and intentional, but there could be a perception bias there that they're unaware of, in that because a certain player is from a certain background, or because they're a certain, you know, because they look a certain way, that then they associate to behave in a different way. Therefore, actually, that's not the behavior that we want in this environment. Rather than understand, actually, well, no, they what they really need is a different approach from a coach. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Again, when we talk about environment and we talk about, you know, being an expert within that environment, what does that look like? Having the end in mind when we talk about player development is really, really important. And the characteristics of that coach or leader, I always go back to it. I used to work part-time within a club coaching. And depending on how my day's gone, sometimes it affected the way I coached and the way I interacted with players, which it shouldn't really.
Well, I mean, I think you say you shouldn't, and I get that from a moral standpoint.
It's natural,
but
right?
You're still human, do you know what I mean? Yeah, you're still human. You're still going to be affected by everything. I think the ability to be able to kind of, if you like, compartmentalize life outside of the work to the work itself can obviously can, you know, there is an element of that, an expectation in that, but you're still human at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So always something I'm working on at the minute is this psychological characteristics of developing excellence. So, you know, that commitment and drive is one thing, but, you know, the goal setting and having that self-reward and having that imagery of what it's going to look like with the end in mind is really, really important. And also using the social support around you as a person is so important. So I think anybody leading a club or anybody leading a company should have this in mind, because it's a huge topic and it's something I'm currently working on.
So let's talk about that. You know, you talk about currently working, and you know, you talked about you know being a coach, coming through as a coach, moving, you know, transitioning into maybe more of a talent coach mentor type role. Now you know, more focused on talent ID and developing your understanding, your awareness around that aspect of the game. But something that obviously we've spoken about briefly is, you know, your intentions of where you're at now and what you want to kind of do for the future in terms of moving towards that strategic, operational, kind of technical director kind of element. Tell me more about that. You know, what is it that's in line with that type of stuff that has really kind of, you know, hooked you in and got you attracted to that aspect of things?
I just feel it's a different world completely. You know, how do you really motivate your employees? How do you, you know, reward them in a way that gives them even more motivation? And it's the stuff around adaptive expertise and having agility and responsible demands of the environment can sometimes get stressful. How do you manage that for yourself, first and foremost, and the people that are working for you, working with you? It's just critical. I think I neglected within my career the critical reflection, but I'm glad it came now than not later. You know, recognizing the assumptions to replace gaps within your own skill set or your team's skill set. Or your environment. Like I said to you, some clubs are doing some awesome work. You know, my time at, you know, Walsall Football Club and West Bromwich Albion, you know, I've met some phenomenal people that are doing some fantastic work. So it's more about leaning on the people that you can really count on.
So, you know, you talked there about critical reflection being key. When were you first kind of, you know, and I know people talk about reflection all the time, but I think maybe there's not enough support in, and I'm speaking at, you know, on a general term here, and I shouldn't really kind of speak in that way, but do you think there's enough guidance and support around what good reflection looks like? I know reflection does get talked about a lot, but I don't know if there's enough guidance and support around what good and effective reflection looks like.
Yeah, I think there could be a lot more depending on the environments people are working in and having the time to do it. But also the courses that you've been on are important as well. And they highlight the importance of reflection. So, you know, as we started, you know, we'd be coaching lots of different environments and planning different sessions, but how much time did we actually reflect? You know, people are saying that you should be working on similar amount of time that you deliver a session to similar a time you should be reflecting. So not just having a driver way of actually reflecting, but reflecting and coming together in those difficult meetings. I say difficult, but challenging meetings where decisions have to be made, quite simply. So in December, scholarships are given. November, December, which is coming up, scholarships are given to under-16s. Who's staying on? Who's leaving the club? And again, it's all about reflecting, and then how are you putting that across to your team? So what is the connections that you've already had? Do you know how to speak to some people in a way slightly different to others? So the culture of that environment or department, communication clear with clarity. Do you know what I mean? Is there already collaboration for the meeting in terms of talent ID department, the coaches, multidisciplinary team? Is the commitment there? Do you really tell people within your team what you want them to achieve, if you know what I mean, on a daily basis? And how do they go about doing it? And do you really communicate with people the way that you want to, or is it the way that they want to hear it? So there's some serious detail in there for sure that, you know, I'm learning off some experienced people.
But that's really interesting, that last piece that you said, you know, because for me, one of the biggest kind of cogs in the way I coach and the way I work is that clarity of communication, in understanding also that the message given isn't always the message received. And you need to make sure you get that hit that nail on its head, because otherwise you've got people going down the wrong route, thinking they're on the right route. And I think that translates itself, whether it's in coach development, whether it's in coach mentoring, even playing, or coaching just generally. How clear are you in your communication? And it just makes me think sometimes that, you know, a lot of people are going to be listening to this are now probably coaches. There probably might be some others, but predominantly coaches. So I guess from your experience, what are some of the insights and things that you've developed around clarity of communication and how effective that should be, and what it takes to be an effective communicator?
Yeah, huge topic again. Yes, I don't know if we've got time for this, but I quite like the phrase that you used. It reminded me of many years ago of learning about yourself, how to think and not what to think, if you know what I mean. If you've been set a challenge, are you going about that challenge to please someone, or is it more about your own development as well as getting the done to your best possible ability? So do you really question the options? You know, what correlation is there? Critical friends, when you're scouting, do I see the same people standing together every game, talking, chuckling, you know, banter? And do they do that because they're disagreeing, or do they stand together every game and watch because they agree? And I think, you know, it's having those people around you to check and challenge. That's the most important thing, especially when it comes to communication and effective communication is important. The pieces that we've done with the main man through communication, remind me his name again, Big Fish, Small Fish.
Oh, Keith.
Keith Daniels, is the main man. Yeah, so the things that he's taught us previously is phenomenal. And I think no matter what field you work in, getting communication training will take you from one side of the fence to the other quite quickly.
No, definitely. Raj, I'm conscious of time, right? So I'm going to ask you just one question. If you could go back and speak to yourself at the start of your journey, knowing what you know now, what's some of the key things that you'd want to be able to say to yourself that you think would have put you in a better position earlier on?
Oh, good question. I don't think there'd be one, but I think it's realizing early on the importance of connection and creating your own circle of trust is really, really important, because that came quite late on. Maybe, you know, I did my level one when I was 16 for my local grassroots club and doing the little mini soccer. But for that journey, not knowing where it could lead, and working within football spaces, creating that circle of trust to allow you to progress, but also allow you to grow. And I think whether you've got a growth mindset or not, being around that environment is really, really important. And that's something that we all work on every day.
I think you're spot on. I think for me, it's and the growth mindset isn't one of always learning new information necessarily, or sometimes it's challenging what we already do. Right. And I think that bit's just as important as trying to go out there and pick up new information and take on board and reflect the way, you know, you talk about it being a critical thinker and a critical reflector. And I think that piece is so key. It's just, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I've learned in my journey as well. It's, again, you hit the nail on the head, and it's not what to think, it's how to think. It's, are you looking for reasons why what you're doing is successful, or are you looking for the problems that it can exist within it? Because if you're looking for the problems that exist within it, I think this is probably one of the biggest things that I've learned in my journey in Fools, is I'm always looking for a problem. no matter how good something is, I'm always looking for the problem within it, so that, because if I can find the problem, then it puts me on the path of finding a solution. And if I can't find a problem, my life experience has taught me that actually you're not looking hard enough, because there's going to be a problem with everything that you do. It's just how you look at it, like how you think about it, rather than what you're looking at. So I think you definitely hit the nail on the head with that one. But Reg, again, conscious of time, man. I thank you again for your time this morning. Really appreciate it. And then, yeah, you know, if there's anything that, you know, I can do to support you going forward, then please do let me know. But I wish you all the best on your journey. You know, it's great to see how far you've come in the 7 or 8 years that we've met. And obviously, you know, hearing a bit more about your journey that I wasn't aware of as well, it's just kind of really helped me build a picture of how much you've just grown to this point today. So now, well done on that. And I really appreciate your time this morning, Reg.
Appreciate it, yes. Good to see you again.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.